The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Again, we can turn it around if we stop doing what we've been doing, because it's certainly getting crazier by the day. My goodness. Have you been following what's going on where Republican candidates for president are being watched so closely by the right-wing conservative media that it's really become the case that climate change is a litmus test for are they true Republicans and true patriots or not? And, of course, in their view, the conservatives, ultra-conservatives, if any Republican candidate dare, or any Republican leader, legislator for that matter, dare say that climate change is real, is a real problem, and heaven forbid, could be caused by humans, they are suddenly banished from the kingdom. So crazy stuff going on there. We'll touch on that a little bit. But today is World Oceans Day. Not sure if you knew that. So in our second half, we'll be chatting with someone from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. That is one of the biggest and best in terms of educational and outreach aquariums in the country, perhaps in the world. We're going to talk about what the biggest threats are to our oceans, our beloved oceans. Of course, it's climate change first and foremost, the great exacerbator. Also, the threat due to overfishing and plastics pollution and what we can do about it. And that happens where we interact with the ocean's best products, and that is what we call seafood. It's marine life down there, and we're going to find out what we can do to help prevent some of the species that are endangered from going extinct by our eating habits. And there's a lot you can do and a lot of information you can get from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They put out a list that they update regularly on which foods are safe and sustainable to eat in terms of from a mercury perspective, in terms of our human health, but also in terms of the ocean health. So stay tuned for that. In our first half, we're going to be taking a look back at a story that really was something I keep reminding people, the beginning of this incredible year of disasters, not natural disasters, man-made disasters, talking about the coal mine disaster that killed 29 miners back in early April. That was the beginning of what we saw as a perfect storm. That is the coal mine disaster followed by the BP oil spill slash kill, and then, of course, leading up to the Japanese nuclear meltdown or near meltdown. Some are calling it a meltdown. All of those showing us that Mother Nature really is in charge here. We humans are just visiting on this planet, and also that human error, worst-case scenarios, do happen. So the follow-up on this angle is that there's been an action taken to revoke Massey Energy's corporate charter. Massey, of course, merged recently, probably trying to submerge their image. We're going to find out from a group that's been in the forefront of holding Massey accountable, and that is Appalachian Voices. And I am very pleased to welcome to the Green Front Sandra Diaz. She is a development director for Appalachian Voices. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Betsy, for having me.
And I keep talking about that coal mine disaster just because it feels like it was overshadowed. You know, we Americans, while it's front page news, we focus on it, every station on it, you know, cable news, Larry King back then, all over it. And then until the next big story happens, and in this case, right on the heels of that, just a couple of weeks after that, and probably just as they were finding out that I don't think anyone survived that accident, or not many, the BP oil explosion happened. That was on Earth Day. Who could forget that? And so, you know, we then went on to focus on that for a couple of months, and that did dominate the airwaves and the newspapers, as it should, that disaster, because it has so many repercussions and will continue to for years, if not decades. But then, you know, tend to forget about what happened last April 5th. So just give us a recap, if anyone could have possibly forgotten, and then let's talk about the aftermath in terms of what Massey has done or not done to be accountable, to make good on. That's something that's obviously not possible to. You can't give lives back. You can't give livelihoods back. You can't take back the pain that's been caused. But just remind us how horrific that disaster was.
Sure. Like you said, it was a few weeks before the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. That was on April 5th. Basically, in mid-afternoon, a powerful explosion ripped through the Upper Big Branch mine in Montcoal, West Virginia. The explosion actually became about 2.5 miles long and was about 1,000 feet below the mountains of the Coal River Valley. And as you said, 29 miners ended up losing their lives despite best efforts to rescue them. But it appears that the base of the fireball, methane fireball that was created, pretty much ripped through and probably killed those miners almost instantaneously. And very tragic events, actually the worst mining accident that has occurred in the U.S. in over 40 years, where that many lives were lost. Then West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin actually commissioned an independent report to look into this, because obviously it shook up the communities that these miners were part of and all across West Virginia, just to see the shocking, kind of toll from this. And they just released that report a few weeks ago. Found that there were a number of different things that Massey Energy failed to do in terms of mine safety to prevent that accident from happening.
And just go ahead and recount those violations.
Sure. So basically, the mines were not properly ventilated. So explosive gases like methane were allowed to build up. There was also unacceptable levels of coal dust in the mine, which is just a terrible combination. So when you have the continuous miner, which is kind of shearing off the coal from the sides of the mine, basically a spark is all it takes to get the explosion going. And then there was also kind of the other major element is that the water sprays were not functioning very well, so that anything that a minor a spark would not be stopped and then continue into the explosion that occurred. So all those things had failed in the process, and if one of those things had been in place, there might not have been an accident, or the accident might have been much less severe than it was.
And I'm sure I'm blocking because it was just so frustrating and so aggravating to see the head of Massey. I'm blocking his name, the guy who was out there.
Oh,
saying,
Don Blankenship. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Don Blankenship. That's why I'm blanking on Blankenship.
Yeah.
He said everything is being done and everything was done and it was a safe mine. He stepped down, is my recollection, dodging the heat, I'm sure, and then Massey merged, trying to submerge its image as, a killer, irresponsible company.
It was reported that that he actually stepped down due to the idea of the merger itself. Don Blankenship's a really interesting character. he has shown throughout his whole tenure at Massey Energy very little regard for the communities and workers. I mean, he said what needed to be said, not very often did he ever really show real emotional investment in what he was saying, and obviously their actions totally go against everything he did say they were committed to. I mean, it's easy to say that you're committed to safety. It's easy to say that you're committed to protecting communities and protecting waterways, but the record shows otherwise, and they have done very little to change their course. And we're hoping that the action that we've taken today might make Alpha Resources, who recently, like you said, bought Massey, kind of look at their practices and hopefully not take with them from Massey the culture of deviance as in their operations.
And we're going to talk about that action in more depth in just a moment. But before we move on from Don Blankenship, I think part of the reason I had such a negative memory of him, it something just didn't ring true. And I just thought he displayed a certain arrogance under the circumstances, but I think it also came out that he is not one who believes that climate change is a real problem or a real threat. Coal mining interest there, so maybe that's not surprising that he might be a little fossil foolish, but some of the comments I read about him show he's really got his head in the sand in so many ways.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, some of the worst of the worst. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of, obviously, coal companies, and they all have differing views on climate change, but many of them have accepted that it is something they need to deal with. Now, how we deal with it, I think, is the point of contention. But for Don Blankenship, climate change was a non-issue. He did not believe it existed. He pretty much... from what I've gathered, just anything that had to do with environmental regulations was something that he was not interested in pursuing. He thought that it was just a bunch of, as he called us, greeniacs.
greeniacs, that's a new one. Oh, my God, I've heard ecomaniacs. I think I may have made that up, but greeniacs, that's great. And I was called on Sean Hannity's show a couple of months ago talking about climate change realities. I was called an earther. I'm for the earth. I kind of like it. And if you're not, then be the first to leave. Here's the door. You know, we're earthers. We who care about Mother Earth, who care about the planet being preserved and everybody on it. And also, I mean, it's amazing to me, not to go off on this too much, but that these people like Don Blankenship and so many others, conservatives, Republicans, even some, you know, out of the political realm, certainly plenty of people, but mostly that's where I read about it, because for some reason these groups tend to be so threatened by, you know, anyone saying climate change is a real threat, as if they know something. Sean Hannity knows more than 98% of the world's scientists. That's really the question, right? And, you know, who are you to second guess scientists who study this for a living? That's what always strikes me, but... mm-hmm. Thoughts, but then we'll go on to your
action. Part of that, though, is the media kind of giving equal weight to, you know, the one or two scientists that are, you know, probably paid by corporate expense to espouse that there is no climate change, you know, giving them equal footing as the 98% of scientists, like you said, that do believe in it.
And that's 98% of the media. There's a few of us who have been connecting the dots on extreme weather and not giving equal time to the deniosaurs for some time. But of course, we're, you know, not there on CNN and MSNBC and Fox. We're on the Internet where the greens can find us, but unfortunately too much of the non-choir don't ever get to hear this stuff. So, my rant is over. That's my professional peeve. Let's go to the action that you've taken and what you hope comes out of it.
Sure. So we've joined together with Free Speech for People, which is an organization that is, you know, working to make sure that corporations are you know, keeping in line with how they do business and making sure that they're responsible. They kind of came out of the Citizens United decision that came out in the courts, and you know, Appalachian Voices, being a regional nonprofit, kind of focused on the environmental impacts in the central and southern Appalachian region, you know, came together, and after this independent report that came out saying that Massey was responsible for this accident that killed 29 miners last year, we just kind of said enough is enough. Massey has been a bad actor on a number of different issues, not just mine safety, but Clean Water Act violations. They paid the largest civil action settlement of $30 million a couple years ago to the federal government. They have been a bad neighbor to Appalachian communities in terms of their mining practices. And so we believe that they don't deserve a corporate charter. They don't deserve the right to do business anymore in the United States. And the idea behind a corporate charter is that that is a privilege that we give to corporations in order to exist and do business. And so we feel that when people aren't and when corporations aren't, you know, doing their due responsibility, following our nation's laws and being good neighbors, we have the right as citizens to revoke that corporate charter. And so we have sent a letter to Delaware State Attorney General Beau Biden to revoke Massey's corporate charter. As you may or may not know, or your listeners may or may not know, many large U.S. corporations are actually incorporated in Delaware just due to the tax laws that exist there. So that's where they're actually
tax laws, right, to them.
Exactly. And so that's where they're based out of. And so we are calling on Attorney General Beau Biden to take a look and do an investigation, and I think he'll find that there is a good reason to revoke this corporate charter.
And, of course, Attorney General Biden has some connections in the White House, so that couldn't hurt you. Good target. Wise strategic move. Sandra, tell us about the aftermath in that community. where the 29 coal miners were killed. Have you been in touch with the community? I mean, this has to be the kind of thing that is still raw. It's just a little bit over a year that this happened, but, you know, so many of these men were young men, you know, mm-hmm. and so several of the victims, had a couple of miners in the family, you know, father, son, brothers, that kind of thing. It must be mm-hmm. just devastating still.
Yeah, I've talked to people who live in the community, who, you know, work on those kinds of issues as well as the issues that we work on. And, it's one of those things that never really goes away. When you lose that many people in a community, it's devastating. Even when you lose one miner to an accident, it definitely cuts people deep. These are very close knit communities. And so, you know, the suffering is great. And people are still upset. Massey, for what people may or may not say in public, in the Southern West Virginia coal fields, Massey is known as a bad actor. People are afraid to work in these mines. But as you know, the job situation in Southern West Virginia, is dire. In a lot of ways, and so people don't have a lot of choice for employment right now, which is something we would like to see change. But right now, people don't have a lot of choice in where they work, and so being able to pick between a Massey mine or another kind of mine or a union mine or a non-union mine, those aren't decisions that are easily made. But Massey just has a huge reputation. If you talk to anyone, especially offline, not recording, Massey Energy does not have a good name, and so I think there's always that fear of a mining accident happening every day. People, on surface mines, underground mines, they go to work knowing that, this could be their last day. And so I think there's always that fear. So when that fear is realized, it just kind of brings up a lot of emotion. So I don't think this will, I think this will affect the community for years to come.
You know, what you're talking about is a very understandable love-hate relationship with Massey and big corporations like that, big mining interests that come into towns and do employ a lot of people, but it's that protector-oppressor a dichotomy as well, because it can be a positive, and then quickly it can turn into, seeing just how, the self-interest of corporations, which kind of goes without saying, and just how risky these operations are, and how little accountability, and in not certainly all cases, but certainly in this case, how lightly safety precautions were taken and not enacted, despite words to the contrary.
Yes, and in terms of employment, I mean, in Southern West Virginia, coal is kind of the major economic driver, but what I do also want to say is that there are also, especially through the employment of techniques like surface mining, like mountaintop removal coal mining especially, they're cutting those jobs drastically. It takes a lot less miners to perform operations like mountaintop removal, and then on top of that, you're really discouraging any new industry from really coming in and setting up shop, because what industry is going to come to a community where the mountains are blown up, the water is orange and black, and smells like rotten eggs, where there's blasting going on, where there's poor community health? If you look at the health rates in these communities with high levels of coal mining, there's definitely a correlation. Dr. Michael Hendricks from West Virginia University has been doing a lot of studies on this and finds that the closer that someone lives to a coal mine, the more likely they will have cancer. So, and there's more of these studies ongoing, but there is a definite link between the coal mining and the processes that go along with that and reduce health. So, you look at places like West Virginia, especially the third district, which is Southern West Virginia, and they're last in a lot of these categories in terms of well-being and health, and a lot of that is due to coal mining. And so, if you're an entrepreneur looking for a place to set up shop, that's probably where you're not going to go. So not only are these new types of surface mining that Massey was a huge fan of doing taking away, providing less jobs, it's also providing a less comfortable atmosphere for new industry to move in as well.
Sandra, what is the current status of mountaintop removal? I know that there's been a lot of efforts to stop it, to slow it, And, of course, those efforts have been thwarted at every possible, you know, step by the special interests, the coal interests, the fossil fuel interests. I've covered this story, you know, over the years. I remember interviewing one of my best favorite interviews. I'm going to forget his name, but maybe it's Bill somebody who was the last holdout fighting the coal mining interests. He's got that house, like, on top of the hill. He refuses to leave. He's had to get his rifle out a few times. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure if you're – maybe you're talking about Jim Weekly. Was that him?
Maybe.
He was – he's in Pigeon Roost Hollow. I'm not sure if that's the
gentleman. Well, this is a real character. He's got a real strong accent, and he's just a, you know, he's a curmudgeon, you know, for the best possible reasons. He's saying, you're going to have to, you know, kill me to get me out of here. I'm not leaving, and they've tried to offer him all kinds of money, and he's like a lone house up on a mountaintop, and he just won't go. Sorry, I don't remember his name. That's, I call it Newsheimer's when you've been covering, I've been in the news business 25 years, covering the Green Beat for 14 years. A lot of people tend to, the names blur together, but certainly the stories are, you know, something I'm passionate about. So thanks for the work you're doing at Appalachian Voices. And also there was a, you know, mountaintop removal activist, a woman named Judy. Again, I'm going to forget part of the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. Who I think we recently lost.
We did. She passed away a few months ago. She was a great fighter. She actually lived in the Cove River Valley, where the Upper Big Branch mining accident occurred. And she was just a strong, courageous lady. She, you know, came from being a Pizza Hut waitress, and basically one day saw her son, you know, standing in the stream behind their house with fistfuls of dead fish, wondering what was going on. And, you know, black water was coming down the stream, and she just at that moment decided she needed to stand up. And there are so many heroes in the region that have done that, that just have been kind of living their lives and just seeing the devastation going on and realizing that if they don't stand up and do something about it, no one else will. So what we've been trying to do with Appalachian Voices is kind of bring the national voice to those local voices and help lift them up, because you know, the politics, as you can imagine, are difficult in places like West Virginia and Kentucky, and getting leverage to make a difference is huge when you have, you know, big political interests who are blocking it, plus you know, workers who align themselves, I feel, unfortunately, more to their company than they can to their community, and it's a tough decision. I don't blame them at all. The miners are kind of in the middle, as far as I'm concerned, because they do want to, you know, have the same things that everyone else wants in terms of comfort and prosperity, but they're forced to make some really tough choices and defend things that probably some of them do not agree with. I mean, like I said, if you talk to some folks offline, you know, they may not come out publicly and say they oppose what's going on, but they do. But they just can't say anything about it.
For good reason, they're concerned. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy Bonds, I'm sorry, I forgot her name, because she was another one of my favorite interviews, one of my sheroes. And I got goosebumps from head to toe when you talked about her standing in the river with her son, because I remember her telling that story with her wonderful accent as well, regional accent. And just had so much respect for her, and she had so much courage. And I came to know her through the Goldman Award, so we should mention that she was one of the recipients of the Goldman Environmental Prizes for her incredible courage and work. So she will not be forgotten. And so the current state of mountaintop mining, is there any real progress being made in the efforts to get this, you know, archaic practice? And, you know, I realize we're all probably using electricity that's powered by coal, so it's easy to knock it, but, you know, we need to make the transition to much cleaner fuels and renewable resources. But in the meantime, we should at least know what the dirty side, the ugly side, the dark side of our addiction to the fossil fuels is, and this is certainly one of those stories.
Definitely. And, you know, in terms of coal use, I just want to say, too, that mountaintop removal is less than 10% of our coal. So it's a small enough amount that I think we can at least move towards removing that type of coal mining out of the process. And it's not like that coal remains in the ground. You can still remove a lot of the coal that has gotten through mountaintop removal coal mining through other means. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has been working with coal companies to do that. They, you know, they are committed to at least mitigating the impacts of mountaintop removal, especially on the water. You know, that's kind of where the EPA has the most influence and power is through the Clean Water Act and really enforcing that.
Except so all that is under attack now by Republicans who would like to dilute the Clean Water and Clean Air Act and not have the and emasculate the EPA and have people think climate change is just an Al Gore hoax.
Exactly. But, you know, in some ways, you know, the attacks are definitely terrible, and we need to fight against them. But I almost look at them as how successful we've been, that they feel like they need
to lie. Have to make a grown man lying. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to, that's a good way to look at it.
Well, it gets me up in the morning, keeps me fighting. So.
Me
I try
too.
To look at everything at least
for the day we can get up and know that we're really winning, and we must be getting close because the critical mass that's become a critical mess of extreme weather events is just unbelievable. I was flipping through the dial night before last and came across the Weather Channel. They were doing a 30-minute countdown on the five most extreme weather events of 2011. I mean, and it's only half over, and they were pointing out that this week is the start of hurricane season. We haven't even gotten hurricane season yet, and just the, you know, record number of people killed and damage toll, you know, from the wildfires, which are still burning in Arizona right now, from the heat now we're seeing across parts of the East Coast, and, of course, the continued flooding situation in the Midwest, and tornadoes in the Southland. Just unbelievable. And, you know, nearly 1,000 people have died just since the record blizzards. We forget about everything that happens, you know, 6 months ago, let alone, you know, a year ago. But they had, you know, record snow falling on the East Coast in Chicago. And that may not have taken so many lives, but just it cost $37 million to close all the schools in Chicago because of that blizzard. So that's one of the ironies, isn't it, that those who would be fiscal conservatives and want to, you know, the government to stop spending so much money and want to deal with the debt, you know, don't seem to realize the human toll, but also just the economic toll of ignoring what certainly appears to be climate change arrived on our shores.
Well, and that is exactly right. And the other thing I'd like to mention too is that, you know, environmental protection actually creates is good for the economy and creates jobs. There's this, you know, kind of the argument that industry makes is that we're killing jobs. But if you look at the overall economic impact of things like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, they actually create jobs because you need people to produce those technologies to keep those technologies going. So you know, industry says one thing, but if you actually look at the facts, those sorts of things. And including mining regulations, just to get back to Massey a little bit, those create better conditions and better jobs for people. There's this huge, you know, kind of misguided argument where coal companies conflate profits with jobs, you know, and it's they talk about that they care about jobs, but what they really care about is their profit. And so if they really cared about jobs, they would be supporting environmental protections and mine safety regulations, because with mine safety regulations comes more workers, because you need people to make sure that mines are safe. So that's something I'm, you know, I've really been big on advocating and talking to people about, is that the EPA is not a job killer. The EPA is actually a job creator, and they're helping with that. But in terms of what you had asked about with mountaintop removal, we have seen a slowdown of mountaintop removal. The EPA is taking a closer look at mining permits now, and they introduced memo of understanding, interagency memo of understanding that brings together all the different agencies, the EPA, the Department of Interior, the Office of Surface Mining, to better collaborate on producing, and the Army Corps, on producing permits and making sure that they're safe for communities, that these permits are not you know, polluting the water at least as much. We like to see them go much further than they already have, but they have done more really than any other agency has, at least in the time that mountaintop removal has happened, to really take a hard look and be very careful, at least when giving out these permits, where if you look at, for example, in the Bush administration and even in the Clinton administration, you know, these permits were being rubber stamped. And just, you know, being passed out like free candy. So I would say while mountaintop removal isn't over, you know, there is some more oversight over the process in terms of permits. They actually worked with with one company, and were able to get them to revise their plan to get 90% of the coal, you know, out of the ground without the detrimental effects, especially the burial streams. And you know, while we'd like to see a transition away from coal, it has to be a transition. So coal's not going to go away overnight. You know, we use about 45% of our nation's electricity comes from coal, and so you know, we as Appalachian Voices are committed to getting to a place where we're not using dirty fossil fuels. But in the meantime, let's at least remove the most horrendous forms of coal mining, like mountaintop removal. Maybe get some of these miners in safe conditions, and maybe some underground mines if that's the way we need to proceed. But then really start investing in that clean energy future that we know is available and is ahead. GE, just for example, came out and said that solar power is becoming cheaper than coal. So these things are starting to happen. Just how quickly they happen with everything that's going on, like you're talking about with climate change, is kind of the big question mark, I think, that we need to try to answer it and move quicker along that timeline than we currently are.
And what would your answer be to the clean coal question mark comment? Because there's advocates in the coal industry who say we just, you know, got to do more clean coal. And many people on the other side say there's no such thing, and I imagine you agree with that.
Yes, I'm not allowed to even say that phrase because coal is dirty no matter how you look at it. And I think it was Judy Bonds who used to be fond of saying, even if marshmallows come out of those stacks in the coal-fired power plants, you still got to get the coal out of the ground. So you're still digging up, you know, toxic heavy metals and putting that into waterways and affecting communities. So even if you make the process of burning coal cleaner, as I like to say as well, the dirty has to go somewhere. So, for example, the mining will always be dirty no matter what. When you make coal cleaner to burn, you're actually creating toxic sludge ponds of coal waste that litter the United States. So you're still it's a dirty process no matter what, even if you arrange where the clean and the dirty are in that process.
Well, Sandra Diaz, thank you for what you're doing with Appalachian Voices to clean up the dirty practices that we're all part of supporting, whether we want to or not. And since we don't want to going forward, is there a way that people can support your work, either a website or perhaps contributions? Because I think you're just doing incredibly important work there.
Well, thank you so much, Betsy. Yeah, I'd refer people to just two different websites. Our organizational website is appalachianvoices.org. You can find out about all the work that we're doing across Appalachia and the Southeast to move us towards a cleaner energy future. If your listeners are particularly interested in mountaintop removal and helping us end that, which we need, we are working on and creating this amazing national network of folks who are really committed to helping us end this practice. They can go to ilovemountains.org. They can sign the pledge to end mountaintop removal. And then another quick feature I'd like to mention is called My Connection, where they can type in their zip code and they can see themselves if they are using mountaintop removal coal to power their homes or their businesses and learn more about the communities that are being impacted by these practices.
From mountaintop mining to the depths of our imperiled oceans. Thank you so much, Sandra, for giving us that update on what's going on, and we'll check back with you and find out what happens with that report that you filed with Attorney General Beau Biden. And when we come back, we're going to talk to someone who is running the Monterey Bay Aquarium, because today is World Oceans Day, so we look at the whole mixture here from top to bottom, and it's all part of our environment. It's all something we all depend on, which is nature, and we're all part of the problem, and yet we can be part of the solution as well. So when we come back, we'll be speaking with someone who can tell us what we can do to help reduce the damage that and the pressure being put on our oceans. Ken Peterson is the communications director there. Stay with us. You're on the Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. We'll be right back. All we gotta do is read the writing on the wall. And we can turn it around. We just come together. We can turn it around.
The Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.